This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Here it is, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. The go-to guy, Jim Moore, is out just traipsing his way through Vegas casinos, face down, drunk in the gutter. Who knows what's going on? But the Groz is here in his place. Hey, Groz.
Guys, good to see you. Now it's official. I've filled in for everyone on this show.
Is that right?
Yeah. Whoever had 2 months as the over-under was correct.
Now you just hit the other shows, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So got to hit the other shows next.
Well, it's good to have you in, man.
You're good to be here. Minstrel. Is that right?
Okay.
Wandering minstrel.
A wandering minstrel.
Yeah.
Is that what that
goes from show to show?
Looking to hang my hat wherever it'll be hung.
Wherever it'll.
By the way, I like that you called it Bob, Dave, and More on show on 710.
I just call it Bob and Dave when Jim's out there just walking around through the newsroom. We're on the air, and he's just having conversations. So
Danny used to call his legion of supporters morons. Remember that from Midnight Run? Is this moron number one?
Yeah.
Put moron number two on the line.
Moron number two.
Yeah, so we had him labeled.
Underrated movie. Hey, coming up, we're going to talk about what's going on in the world of baseball because this story's got legs and it doesn't appear to be going away anytime soon. So Alden Gonzalez of ESPN, who's written a few different stories on this, will join us at 3:30. The professor, John Clayton, will join us at 4 o'clock as he does every day. Meanwhile, we'll talk some football. We got football happening this weekend.
Yeah, is everyone excited? I mean, I imagine what this week has been like has been excruciating minutia on every aspect of the Seahawks season ending. But
we haven't gotten into the deep minutia yet. Well, now we're just talking about guys who are. And we'll do it later in the show about impending free agents that you need to make a concerted effort to bring back. The minutia happens, in a few weeks.
Okay, right. I gotcha.
When we start breaking down how many times they run to the left versus the right and how successful they were.
Well, I got a call from Moyer today, and he's like, this Pete Carroll thing is so stupid.
He tweeted about it.
Yeah.
He was very agitated by the
yeah.
710. We had an interview with Jeff Schwartz yesterday.
Right.
Who based, just to summarize, he feels like the offense is outdated here and Pete Carroll needs to modernize it.
Right. Yeah, modernization is the new catchphrase.
Yeah, and that he's, in a sense, holding back Russell Wilson, and he's not the only one. It seems to be a popular thought. But then that goes, you take that a step further, Groz, the conversation becomes, is Pete Carroll the right guy, and do you want to, should they replace him? And
I kept
quoting you saying, don't get tired of winning. Don't get tired of winning. What?
Right.
And we'll just go pluck one off the coach tree out there because there's so many winning coaches who win every single year. And this is on the heels of a year where they won 11 games in the toughest division in football.
With the toughest
schedule in football.
Yep.
And this thing, they have never been more injured in Pete Carroll's tenure.
They had the most injuries of any team in the league.
Right.
Lost the most games for that.
It was 102 starts they lost.
And won a playoff game.
Right. Yeah, so
he's got to go.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
He should ridiculous. Have done more with that. He really underachieved with that.
There's 2 years where he didn't have double digit. Well, he had 3 years actually of not double digit wins, but one of them they went to the playoffs. That was the 7-9 year.
Yeah,
his first year, or second year. I think it was the first year. But and then playoffs. But the thing that was said yesterday by Jeff Schwartz, Groz, he's like, he's never going to change. He's too old. He's the youngest coach in the league.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's 68 now, and he is the oldest coach, but I mean, just the way he operates, and that's why a lot of these guys like Clowney and Dwayne Brown are like, hey, I want to be here, man. They've been in other places. And, I think Kyle Shanahan's more old school than Pete. I mean, he's more stodgy and old-fashioned than Pete Carroll is, so it just doesn't make any sense. Yes, physically he is 68 years old, but it's not like he's too old to learn a new trick, and he's doing it and, self-evaluating every offseason.
When you hear that, what do you think? People,
I think, Bob. You said it.
Yeah.
I think it's insane to get tired of winning, to get tired of success, to feel like you got to make it. You got to take it another level. And do I think that Pete Carroll's outdated? Look at the Titans.
Yeah.
Tell me that they're not outdated for what they're doing and how they're playing right now. I mean, if winning is outdated, then Pete Carroll is outdated.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll call myself outdated right along with him.
Right. I mean, it's one thing if they had a 6-10 season, bring on that
different
conversation.
Story. Even
but while you're winning with players as enthusiastic as they are, it makes no sense.
Couldn't we have explained away a down season this year, though, based on everything we just
Absolutely.
Talked about? And by the way, people questioning the toughest schedule. That's not my opinion. That's you got that off the...
Yeah, it was on Football Database, I
think. Yeah, I mean, it's based on the winning percentage of their opponents, the toughest division. These aren't opinions. Those are just facts based on record. So had they had a down year, let's say they went 8-8. Yeah, I would have been disappointed. I'm a Seahawks fan. I would have been incredibly disappointed. But it would have made sense based on them losing their three running backs,
right.
Working with their fourth string tight end, working with a guard that hadn't played a game all year in the most crucial moment of the season in Phil Haynes. And he was a backup to a backup in Jamarco Jones, and your center got knocked out early in the season. And I mean, your potties. I mean, it was just one injury after another to key personnel.
Yep.
And again, throwing the schedule in the division they play in. Yeah, 8-8 probably would have made sense. I wouldn't have liked it, but I would have understood it.
They were successful. They were 11-5 and won a playoff game. To me, well, unless you're the New England Patriots, that's a successful year for any franchise.
Well, and the funny thing is, I think Groz is that somebody brought this up, but I think it was Mora, actually, that now that everybody knows and is on board with Russell Wilson, it's like you're misusing him because he's such a talent. Well, like nobody was calling him that before, and now the fact that he's so dynamic and he can do all these things.
You misused him into an MVP season this year, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, yeah, it's good fodder, but it's just remember how it was, you know,
yes.
Those few years when they first started. And this is, and even more painful was the quarterback situation with Charlie Whitehurst and T-Jack and Hurt Matt Hasselbeck and, you know, the end of that era. And it was just painful to go through that. You know, they end up cutting, or I guess Lofatupu didn't agree to, you know, he didn't agree to a contract. And so he ended up going out the door, and it was just a painful transition of going from, you know, one coach to the next and trying to find a quarterback. And yeah, again, yeah, like you said, it's just, I'm not tired of what's going on.
No.
You could pretty much count on the Seahawks being in the race for the playoffs every year.
Now, having said all of that, that doesn't mean they're without flaw, that there aren't areas that you look at and say, boy, I wish they could do this better, or they need to address this. And you look at what stands out about the teams that are still in the playoffs right now. If you could pull something from one of these teams, what would it be? What do you envy most? Like you could say, man, I'd love that 49ers D-line. Or I'd love
Derrick Henry.
Henry,
right?
Or 49er D-line. Or I'm done.
Just the Chiefs offense, the way they run it. Or the Titans have a good offensive line. I mean, is there one thing? I would like the O-line because I think I'm not saying Chris Carson is Derrick Henry, but imagine behind a really, really good offensive line what he might be able to do.
Sure. I mean, and that's...
And Russell, for that matter.
As you guys... plunge into that minutia, it's not really minutia, it's actually real stuff, but as you plunge into it deeply, I mean, that's going to be the area, along with getting another cornerback. I think, you know, that's job one. It's going to be probably rebuilding that offensive line.
Yeah,
you may have one holdover.
Pass rushers, I mean, that was, they were bottom of the league in terms of quarterback pressures this year. I think, what did we say yesterday, 31st or 32nd?
Oh,
in terms of pressures, 28 sacks during the season. It was a bad year for that.
Well, I would say this. I'm, in my opinion, it's pass rush, and then everything else is a distant second. Because, and this is a quote from John Schneider, you can't have enough pass rushers. So, you know, that's just something that they were not able to get. I agree, though, with the corner. That my contention is that they need to get back to being more of a hammer type of defense.
Yep.
They were kind of soft last year. You know, they allowed a lot of yards in between the 20s, and, you know, they did enough to win 11 games, but mostly that was the takeaways.
Well, you know what I think, Dave, too, is that if you look at Pete Carroll, that's since he's staying.
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere.
Since he's elected to stick around for a while.
We know how he did this in the first place, and we know where his background is on defense. It's in the secondary. Right. And you now have a pair of safeties that bear a passing resemblance to what you had before.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, build it from the back line up. That's why I would say corner. I mean, when you had that cover corner in Richard Sherman, so good on that one side, and it looks like Shaquille Griffith certainly had a tremendous year this year based on where he'd been and what he looked at. I mean, you get another corner, you can start building it from the back forward again if you want.
Yeah, and I think the safeties are such a big – addition to what the corners, you know, the confidence that they can have if you know you have those guys behind them. And used to kind of have that debate, is Sherman that good because of Earl Thomas, or is Earl Thomas that good because of Sherman? You want to be able to have that debate. And it really didn't even come up until Stephon Diggs got here. Quandre Diggs, sorry. So, yeah, with him, I'm hoping Marquise Blair comes back and takes that second step, because, you know, they went with three safety defenses. And that last reception, I believe they had three safeties on the field. One of them was Lano Hill, and it just has not worked out.
Wait, do we just dread seeing him on the field at all outside of special teams? I mean, it's gotten to that point where if you're watching the game and you're on Twitter at the same time, I saw just one tweet after another from Seahawks fans. Why is Hill on the field? What is he doing out there? What's Pete thinking? What's Norton doing? I mean, just he's become that kind of, and I feel bad for him. I don't think he's the worst player they've ever had. He's had problems. He's not an elite player. He's a guy.
Who's the corner that I thought was going to be really good and everybody else did and you couldn't stand him?
Therald Simon.
That's kind of
Cross
who he
remembers
is.
That.
Yeah, because
LSU guy.
You heard from Richard Sherman and just watching him in practice, and he was built perfectly and he had a nastiness about him. I think that Delano Hill falls into that category. He's all of those things. And it's not because, you know, he's a knucklehead or anything like that. It just hasn't worked out for him, but they believed that he was maybe the more talented safety out there, even ahead of McDougal, and it just never materialized. I think I remember he picked off a 2-point conversion in Pittsburgh, and then he had a couple of, you know, good plays, and there was a couple of times. Remember last year he got a pass interference penalty against San Francisco, which was not – he had great coverage. He flashed a little bit, but it just got to the point where, like you said, you just – he didn't take good angles, and you just dreaded every time you saw him on the field.
Unfortunately, it felt like he and Tedrick Thompson were kind of the same player with different numbers.
Yeah,
is sort of how it felt. Yep. Like they were capable of those moments where you could go, I see what they see in him. He's got good instincts for the ball, or whatever you want to say, or he made a good play here. And then you have that moment where you see him getting beat, or the ball getting over his head, or something like that. And it felt like they were just sort of interchangeable in that way.
Yeah, it's one thing to be able to kind of identify it. I was thinking about just the playoffs in general and the way it played out. I mean, if you're the Ravens, where do you go after this year? I mean, what did you do something wrong? They didn't go as far, you know, they didn't go nearly as far as they wanted to. They didn't even win a playoff game.
I know.
For the second straight year. What's the difference between last year and this year if you're the Ravens?
And they looked unbeatable, and they weren't a team. Yeah, we talked about this as well, where we watch every snap, every moment of a Seahawks season. So we can sit there and nitpick it to death, whereas from the outside, Ravens look like they were pretty complete.
Well, 14-2, too.
Well, and a really good defense, a great offense.
MVP.
So maybe there are things they've been complaining about there that we're not aware of. But, yeah, that's you're asking some tough questions there, like what in the heck? We see, you know, maybe outside of the 49ers, the most complete team in all of football with the MVP on your roster, and you get knocked out in the first round
to a 9-7 team.
I would rather be doing radio here than in Baltimore.
Yeah.
That is going to be hard. That's going to be hard discussion to have.
Well, your expectations had to be Super Bowl, right?
Absolutely.
What happened was your MVP had a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
His first bad game, maybe his only bad game of the season.
Three turnovers.
Well, he had a bad game.
That's the thing. I mean, you built so much around that and around him. They changed their whole offense for him. So you're right. He goes out and has a stinker. Yeah, it's trouble for everybody. And that's why, you know, look, this one, I still don't believe that this thing is all about Russell Wilson. I think that's what people are seeing now. But you have to remember, anybody that watched him closely, and you watch him closely in the playoffs, there was no running game. I mean, the running game went out the door with Chris Carson, who I think is special. And so, you know,
Penny was 5.7 yards per carry this year.
Yeah,
too.
And Penny started to prove that he was a first rounder. He gets hurt. So, I mean,
to me, it's a miracle they won a playoff game, to be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
I think the fact that they got matched up against a team that was as injured as they
helped.
Yeah.
Sure, but they were still on the road.
Yep.
But, you know, you're looking at, like, Moore wrote down some of these things. What would you be, you know, envious of? Go to 49er D-line. And that's from tanking, you know, for a few years.
First-round draft picks for four straight years or something like that.
I think there's four first-round draft choices on their D-line. The Derrick Henry one, I mean, yeah, he's special. But to me, Chris Carson, I think he belonged in the Pro Bowl. I think that Carson, I'm not envious of Derrick Henry as a running back.
I'm envious of him, but I don't think that they're desperate need of him.
Yeah, that's the place where I think they least need it.
Yeah,
because,
I agree.
You know, Travis Homer showed some stuff. He was a rookie, man. You know, and that's the thing we talk about. Somebody was complaining about Cody Barton. I mean, you got to remember, man, that guy's a rookie. He's going to come back and be a
Who's
lot
complaining
better.
About him?
Oh, somebody on the text toy.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
Just, oh, yeah, I think he showed enough to be, I mean, yeah. You expect improvement from him. He's going to be your starting linebacker next year.
But, you know, and this isn't always the case, but I know for me, man, when I came back my second year, I just saw everything. It slowed down for me. I just went back. My rookie year, I felt like I don't even know how to play this game.
Every player has said that, you know, in the years that me and Bob have interviewed him when we talked to him, they say the same thing, that it's slow and you're not thinking about what you have to do.
Right.
Whereas a rookie, you spend all your time thinking about where you are, where you're supposed to be. As a second-year guy, you know what you're doing.
Look how good the 2018 draft is now. You know, all of those guys have gotten to the point where it's, you know, 1 year under their belt, playing really well. So I'm hoping the same thing happens, because that 2018 draft looks awfully good. You know, they got a lot out of that. Rasheem Green, Trey Flowers, Michael Dixon, Will Disley. I mean, lots of good players. So if these guys like Blair, Ugo Amadi, Cody Barton, you know, and hopefully L.J. Collier.
What was your guys' take on I think it was Pete who said it, that this reminded him of
2012?
Yeah.
12.
Yeah. Similar, what was your take on that?
I get what he's saying. I mean, the team's built completely different. All of your youth and promise, for the most part, was on defense back then. You had everybody at a bargain rate, remember?
Outside, except for your rookie quarterback.
Yeah. And outside of Earl Thomas, who was a first-round pick, but you had Sherman and you had Cam, and they were all young, and they were – so you saw what was coming, but it feels like it could be similar in that, yeah, you got a lot of youth you're counting on, in that one, this year of maturation and this experience propels them to the next level the way it did in 2012, where you felt like you were close. They were that close, what, 35 seconds away from beating the Falcons that year? Yeah, they were one score away from coming back in this game that looked like they had no business being in.
Without a running game, with
zero running game, a guy off the couch and another guy, two guys who hadn't even been playing, and a sixth round pick and a rookie out there. So, and you were a score away from going to the NFC title game with all those obstacles we talked about, all the injuries, all the schedule and everything. It's, yeah, I get what he's saying. I don't know if it's exactly the same, but I get why he said that.
Remember the end of the 2012 season? I mean, it was, I'm pretty sure New England was in that part, and that was the UMad Bro game.
Yeah.
But then they went, and I can't remember. I think they beat, was that the year they beat San Francisco up here, like 42-12 or something? But they also had 58-0 against Arizona. They beat Buffalo up in Toronto by 3-4 touchdowns, and they were just blowing people away. But the thing that was so different then is that you had a sense that this Pete Carroll defense was going to be really dominating, and it was. It was the next year. And
there's the difference. It's flipped. You've got a top five offense, or, you know, where you
DK Metcalf is playing the role of Richard Sherman.
Yeah, your promise is centered around the offense and what it's capable of doing. Your defense is where you need to shore things up.
Yep.
So, yeah, we'll see. And just quickly before we get into take two, we've talked about players that are free agents, and Jim wrote a piece, top 10 players, top 10 free agents he thinks they need to bring back, and he ranked them in order. Number one was Jadeveon Clowney.
It's going to be the toughest to bring back.
Unless we hold him to his word. We played a clip from him yesterday saying, I'm not going to go play for a garbage team just for a paycheck. I want to be in a position to win. So that eliminates a handful if he sticks to that. Leads you to believe maybe he's not going to go for the top dollar. If I can get something representative in Seattle or elsewhere that I think I've got a chance to get to a Super Bowl,
we'll see. I mean,
maybe he comes back. But is there a number you draw the line at? I'm not paying him above this number.
I'm going to say that there probably is, but I can't tell you what it is.
Just for you, would you scoff if they said, all right, we're paying him $20 million a year? Would you go, okay, that seems silly, or that sounds about right?
I'm definitely in the camp of Vin Schneider. I trust. I believe in the moves that he's made, especially with the cap, and if they determine that he's too expensive and they can use that money wiser elsewhere, I could see it.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, he's got one shot at the brass ring here. I appreciate what he said and the emotion of when he said it, but you know, he's got the one shot to make the most money. And, you know, maybe he'll parse it. Maybe he'll think about, you know, being here. But it's going to be awfully tough to turn down more money when this is your big shot at it.
We were talking about that yesterday. Like, you know, I'm sitting here playing with his money here.
Right.
Hey, it's just a few million dollars here.
Yeah. Right. What's the difference? Yeah. $4 million a year difference playing for Jacksonville or.
Yeah. But this is a hard bridge to kind of build here. But if you, from what you're hearing from Jadeveon Clowney, don't you think that if it's, you know, if the.
It's close.
The premium is 20 to 22 million, that he'll take 18 to 20 million. You can stomach that, right? He's not a double digit sack guy. But he's incredibly disruptive. He's a winner. He's just an amazing athlete and disruptive. And, you know, you hope he can get, you know, 9, 10, 11 sacks. And maybe he takes a little bit of a discount there. What we were talking about yesterday, you go, okay, over a four-year period, you're going to take like $2 million less. That's $8 million. Yeah. I mean, you can't, you know, you can't. If
he's
you're
not
a player,
gonna do that. You
you're going to have it. To look at it and go, even if it's, you know, somebody like Jacksonville, I'm just throwing out a team that's probably a few years away from the playoffs. Yeah, that's got to be something that you have to consider. Like, what can this mean to my family and my future? And
well, the other thing is, this is the NFL. How far away are you really?
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of ruling teams out, you know, you rule out the Giants. They're not going to be there.
Right.
Everyone else, you can probably make an argument for that they might be a player or two away, it seems, in the NFL.
Maybe the Bengals, but, you know.
Well, right. The Bengals, too.
Be a couple of teams.
I'll put them in there.
Rule out. All right, let's take two.
Take two.
So sad that Jim isn't here today because Washington State upset Oregon last night 72-61 for their first win over a top 10 team since 2007.
How about that? 13 years since you beat a top 10 team.
Wow. It's a heck of a night for Washington college basketball last night.
Yeah, it was.
Every D1 school in the state won.
Yeah, I like this Kyle Smith we interviewed. He came from USF, and supposedly he's an analytics guy and things like that. After the game, you know, he said he used first name basis too. He goes, "Yeah, this weekend we got Clay coming up here," and you know, at one point, Casey Jacobson said something about, "Well, they got to you know capture the energy of this crowd." Did you see the crowd there? My gosh, they got to get some.
Well, 4,000 is a lot of people. That's about two or three times what they're normally doing, unfortunately.
Oh, my gosh.
But they're gonna have a good crowd on Saturday. You got Thompson you're honoring. Steph Curry, I know, is going as well.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be big. But they need to give people a reason to believe it's
right.
Worth their time to get
and
out there.
And this is a pretty good way to start.
It's a huge reason.
Right, as you mentioned, another big win. UW defeated Oregon State 64-56 with freshman Raekwon Battle shining in his first career start in place of the injured Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah, well, UW bouncing back. I was asking Jim yesterday if he thought maybe we were a little they were being overhyped a bit. I understand they've had some losses, you know, in terms of players that they were counting
well, losing
on.
Losing their point guard was a crusher, but yeah. That's how they've got to win, the way they played last night.
Yeah.
Holding teams under 60 points. I mean, Cameron Dollar used to say to me all the time that Lorenzo Romar said it too, that with young players sometimes in college, it takes half the year for them to realize that the coaches aren't working against them.
Yeah.
That they actually just want to help them and that guys get that and then they understand that and it shows up. And, you know, Washington won that game because they did not allow Oregon State, who's a very good outside shooting team, to shoot well from the outside. They stretched their 2-3 the way they have to do it. So, they can still be successful, but it was a big loss they took, and they're a team that's, in my mind, they're going to have a few more bumps. And if they're to make the tournament this year, as opposed to looking at like they were pretty solid for a while there,
yeah,
they're going to probably have to play their way in.
Did a good job with Tinkle. He was 2 for 12 and 0 for 4
yeah.
From the three-point. I mean, the guy went 11 for 11 from the stripe, but, yeah, they were just 16% three-point. And that's the thing that, you know, usually is argued that kills the zone. All right?
Yep. All right, coming up, we're going to try to catch up on this never-ending saga in the world of Major League Baseball and sign-stealing. We're going to talk with a man who's been covering it for ESPN. Alden Gonzalez will join us next year with Bob, Dave, and more. The Graw's in with us today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN. The story is not going away. In fact, it seems like it's gaining more and more traction every single day, talking about the story in baseball and the cheating surrounding the Astros and Alex Cora and everything else going on, and I imagine we'll hear more names. But let's talk to a guy who's been covering it for ESPN. He's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Alden Gonzalez is here with us. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing good. And it's, you know, listen, I'm a baseball fan for, you know, since I was a little kid. So this is, it's wildly interesting, but it's also a big bummer. You know, this is yeah. certainly not good for a sport that's had a challenging time staying current, appealing to the youth, sort of staying in the spotlight. Before we get into particulars and, you know, who did what and what should happen, how damaging is this story, do you think, to the sport itself?
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on the heart of sort of where my sentiments lie with this. I'm a little torn because, you know, for one thing, it's the middle of January, which is traditionally the most boring time in the sports calendar for baseball. It's championship week for the NFL. And the story all over the country among sports fans, it revolves around baseball and baseball. I mean, there's no close second. And I don't remember a time when that was the case this time of year with baseball. And also yesterday was just such a fascinating day because it felt like sort of the day that baseball sort of climbed into the modern age with all these wild social media conspiracies and fake accounts claiming to be Carlos Beltran's niece. Like, I don't remember something as scandalous as this going on with baseball that sort of captivated such a wide audience, at least not in a long time. So it was a fascinating day, but I also side with you in that it's a huge bummer because, you know, I think for all the problems that baseball has, I think the greatest problem it might face now is that there's just sort of a trust issue among its fans, among the people who follow the sport. I think that's why these penalties were so severe is, you know, if the viewers can't trust what they're seeing right in front of their eyes and that the players are doing it fairly, baseball's got a big problem. That's why so many people bring up the link to PEDs with this, just because of how serious the matter is for the sport and just how polarizing it could be for the people who consume it. And my concern, guys, it's not so much what has already happened with all this, with, you know, all the punishments levied against the Astros, with three managers fired over the course of 4 days, which is just a dizzying amount of turnover. It's what follows this, right? Like, I think there's a pretty good case to be made. And if you speak to people around the league, you'll get the idea that, you know, Major League Baseball knew about this for years and it didn't do anything about it. It didn't investigate it. The reasons why, I'm not sure. I'm sure part of their logic was they didn't really want to open up Pandora's box. And I'm sure it would have been really difficult to get players to sort of cooperate with an investigation given the power of the players union. But they sort of kind of turned a blind eye toward this. And, you know, now that this is going on, I worry about everything else that's going to follow. And we're already seeing some of this we saw Jack McDowell today accuse Tony La Russa of doing the same thing in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not going to stop. And other teams are going to get thrown into this. And, you know, before you know it, like, everybody's going to be tainted somehow with this, sort of like it was with PEDs maybe 20 years ago. I think that's what I'm sort of dreading. It's just sort of what's next after this. I don't think it stops what happened these last few days.
You mentioned that the penalties being severe. Do you believe that they were? Because even in the piece that you wrote for ESPN.com, you've talked to, you know, different sources, former players, managers, scouts, and what have you, and some saying, you know, they barely got punished at all. $5 million, pocket change. That's essentially what they made just on that World Series alone. The players themselves didn't get punished at all. So there's some that feel like they got off really, really light in light of everything that's going on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of the people I spoke to believe that. Part of me thinks that this was maybe as severe as they could have done it for a couple of reasons. Number one, you got to remember, the only way that Major League Baseball got all the information it did in the investigation is that players cooperated with the investigation. And the only reason why players cooperated with the investigation was that they gained immunity for doing so. That's one of the reasons why the players weren't suspended. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the second reason why they weren't suspended was because, and I sort of agree with this, and Rob Manfred wrote about it in that statement that he put out, it's really difficult to parse who benefited from sign stealing, who didn't, who used it, who didn't. Like with PEDs, somebody fails a drug test and there you go. That person failed a drug test and you could suspend him for performance enhancing drugs. With sign stealing, I mean, the lines are blurred so much that it's really difficult to separate who did what and who didn't. So I kind of get that part. The $5 million fine is very light for an owner like Jim Crane, who's probably worth billions of dollars, but it's the maximum allowed under Major League Baseball's constitution. They can't fine them that much. The draft picks, it's a significant amount of draft picks, but, you know, for a team like the Astros, maybe not as valuable in this point in their franchise. I think a couple of points that were brought up to me that were fair, one a little bit more minor than the other. The first one being that they were not penalized internationally. They could have lumped that into in addition to the draft cost. But the other one was that the owner, Jim Crane, wasn't punished whatsoever. As a matter of fact, it seemed like Rob Manfred went out of his way to say that Jim Crane had no involvement in this whatsoever, and that he didn't even know about it. And I think, look, it's one of two things with Jim Crane. Either he knew about it but didn't stop it, or he didn't know anything at all about what was going on with his own franchise. And I think both those things are pretty damning. So a lot of people talked about how, why wasn't the owner reprimanded in any way? And I think that part of it is fair as well.
Hey, Alden, if you're comparing it to PEDs, you know, the players that took PEDs benefit from it. I guess you want to know, okay, where did it come from? Who's injecting them? Who's giving them the drugs? In this situation, you know, everybody, it seems, you know, at the plate benefited from knowing what pitch was going to come. But do we know who is involved in the specifics? Who's banging on the garbage can? Who's taping the buzzer on Jose Altuve's shoulder? I mean, who was involved in the specifics? Do we know all this, or was it just that everybody just kind of fell into it? I mean, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, and you touched on something else that's really interesting to me. A lot of people have raised this question in the wake of the report. If you notice, no player was mentioned in that report except for one player. And the one player who was mentioned was Carlos Beltran. And I think a lot of people were asking themselves this question. If Carlos Beltran was a player at the time with the Astros, why was he the only player who was mentioned in that report? Is it because he is a current manager in baseball? Was he not granted the same immunity that others were? I mean, my conclusion from reading the report was that Alex Cora was indeed maybe a central figure in what the 2017 Astros did, but it didn't really paint it as if Carlos Beltran was the main guy in terms of a player standpoint setting all of this up. It seemed like he was just one of the guys who had the idea or who benefited from it, but I mean, he's not the only one, right? But at the end of the day, I think that's my biggest question too. Why was Carlos Beltran the only guy mentioned? I think there are a lot of questions that are stemming from this, and that's, I think for me, that's a central one.
Well, and that one, Alden, is the one that sticks with me, is that there's no part of me that believes there's somebody sitting in that dugout hearing somebody smashing the trash can over and over and being totally in the dark as to what's going on. I mean, wouldn't they be going, what are you doing over there? Knock it off. The idea that somebody's not in the know, I think everybody on that team is complicit. I don't think there's anybody that was in the dark. I just, that seems wildly improbable. But just to wrap up, how does this end?
Yeah, I think my fear is that I don't know where it ends. I don't know who else gets dragged into this. One thing that I feel pretty certain about, and I felt this as soon as Mike Fiers made those comments about the Astros back in November, it's not going to stop there. If you think that only the 2017 Astros or the 2018 Red Sox engaged in using technology to steal signs, then I think you're being a little bit naive. And I don't have specifics as to which other teams are doing it. But look, you put highly competitive people in high-stakes environments like baseball, and you give them the resources. Major League Baseball has shown, as a matter of fact, professional sports in general has shown that you put these highly competitive people in those circumstances, and they're going to look for every edge possible to gain an edge on somebody else. Baseball is littered with examples of that. And look, you would, in a utopia, you would love people to just apply simple common ethics to things, but that just doesn't end up being the case in these endeavors. And so, you know, and you also got to consider the nomadic nature of baseball, where guys are switching teams constantly. And I'm sure there are situations where guys show up coming from a team like the Astros, shows up in a different clubhouse and is like, hey, look, those guys are doing this to steal your signs. And if we're not doing the same thing, then we're falling behind. And I think that sort of sparked the era of players using steroids. So I'm certain that players on the Astros or on the Red Sox are going to be upset that they're getting singled out on something like this, and I wouldn't be surprised if players started ratting out other players from other teams. And I think this is just going to be continuous. Other people are going to get dragged into it. I'm sure Rob Manfred hoped that when he released that statement that that was the end of it. He could put a nice little bow on it. I'm afraid. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm afraid it might just be the beginning.
Boy. Well, I guess we'll be talking again then.
I think so.
Hey, Aldon Gonzalez of ESPN, doing a great job. You can check his stuff out at ESPN.com. Some really good pieces on this story, and I'm guessing it won't be the last you write about it. We really appreciate you taking some time with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. The story continues. In fact, we'll continue to talk about it, get Graz's take on this whole thing when we come back. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
What in the world is this?
Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program. Tell him who it is, man.
What do you got rolling there?
Tell him who it is.
Oh, that was Jeff Angel, Static Land.
Angel.
Jeff Angel?
Jeff Angel.
Jeff Angel, Static
I thought he
Land.
Was a magician.
No, that's Chris Angel.
Oh.
That's Chris.
Why aren't we playing Rush, Bob?
We played it the entire day after the news of Neil Peart came out.
I was instructed specifically to only play Rush that day.
Yeah. Okay. So if we do it this day and this day only. And it was every break. Yeah.
Every break.
Yeah, we had 3 hours of Rush.
Even the NFL game.
You weren't there that day. I think you were traveling. That's why you missed it. Dave missed it. So the Professor John Clayton will be with us at 4 o'clock. We'll talk some NFL with him. Good stuff from Aldon Gonzalez there in the previous segment. And Graz, you didn't get a chance to weigh in with him, but we were talking during the break about this baseball story, and you're an old-school baseball fan. Mm-hmm. I'm an old-school baseball fan. So on the surface, just going surface level on this, this is just terrible for baseball, a sport that's desperately trying to stay relevant, trying to stay in the spotlight on some level while they're bleeding fans and bleeding ratings. And then you have something like this come out, and you're questioning the integrity of the game and who's above board, who's below board. This is just it's a bad news story that doesn't feel like it's going to end anytime soon.
How can it? How can it? This has been going on in baseball for 60, 70 years. I wonder how baseball handles things. And we were talking about this before the show. I mean, the NBA had a referee throwing games in the postseason. And they solved the problem and moved on.
How'd they do that?
That's one of the things that we were talking about, Dave. It was like, what did they do exactly? And
Donaghy is out, and that's it.
Yeah, they kind of, I mean, they did the right thing by moving past it. I mean, it was kind of the bottom line on that. NFL had their drug issues. They were never as big as they were in baseball. Baseball winds up in front of Congress somehow.
Sammy Sosa can't speak English all of a sudden.
They have all these. They do all these incredibly embarrassing things to themselves, and now there's this. And I'm just afraid that baseball's gonna. Instead of just look, you have something gone wrong. Here's what we do, and I think the guy talked about it too. Just no more live video feeds.
Yeah. It's one of the suggestions where they just eliminate technology, essentially, behind the scenes.
Well, just you can let it go 10 seconds delayed or whatever it is. I mean, everything like that. But just stop. I mean, in other words, in my book, I would solve the problem. I would stop looking for people to blame. And baseball has this compulsion when this stuff happens about looking for people to blame. And this is a bottomless pit. Bob knows this. I mean, this is a bottomless pit. Dave Henderson used to say all the time that, at baseball, you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I mean, it's okay to steal signs. It's just not okay to do it to this level. So I think Bob is right. I mean, the steroid crisis hurt baseball.
You know, there's something so much more nefarious about this with the clicker thing supposedly on Altuve's shoulder.
Do we believe that?
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, part hasn't been proven for people wondering. That's taken on a life of its own, and I don't know if it's real or not.
Well, and
from a tweet.
Honestly, whether you think one way or the other, it's pretty spectacular, right? He comes running home and he says, "Don't rip my jersey off."
Yeah.
And then people are reading like, "Oh, is he saying I got a wire or something like that?" I mean, it's amazing to me that
there's no question that this is a bad story. It's kind of how they deal with it now, right? Isn't that what the biggest issue is how they deal with it?
Well, I I think you make a great point there about basketball, because it got me thinking, like, okay, how did they just move on? Well, they just took care of it and said, you know, so why don't you just go, you know what, this has been going on at some level since, what was the game you referenced?
1951.
1951, it's been going on. And, you know, and it's the same thing in the NFL. I mean, you can sit there. Remember Doug Baldwin a few years ago said he was stealing signs from across the,
yep,
the field. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you're doing it there, but if you're using technology and little buzzers and things like that, I mean, that's like we talked about yesterday. Remember the movie Casino?
Right.
Where the guy had his,
sure,
partner buzzing his leg. You know, I mean, it's just, it becomes really evil all of a sudden instead of kind of harmless. But I think you're right. I mean, if you just go, all right, we're going to take away the live feed, we're going to do this or that, and then we're just going to move on from it.
See, I mean, here's the thing that I wouldn't do. I wouldn't do an investigation. Why investigate it when you're going to find time after time after time that it happened?
They'd be
Why
pilloried
not?
If they weren't investigating, if they just left it at, nah, here's we're
what,
not going to
look,
ask
we
questions.
Understand that this has been going wrong. Here's what we're going to do about it. I mean, what, yeah, does investigating it do now?
You think they could get away with that, though? Saying,
like, not,
know, we're
now.
We're not going to dig. Well, not now, but in the beginning, had they come out, this.
Yes, this, I would have. They would have. There would have been some blowback.
Sure.
But it would have died down. You're not feeding the animal that way. If you stop investigating, people will stop looking for other examples of it.
And this thing's picking up speed, right?
This is just beginning.
Well, now you got Jack McDowell coming out talking about, right, hey, in the 80s, Tony La Russa had this electronic, yeah, thing going on, and we were doing this back then. And you've got other guys speaking out on Twitter and speaking out in
if
videos.
If you concede that it happened and say, here's how we're going to fix it, the story dries up.
All right, coming up, we'll turn to football.
You should be the commissioner this week.
Ross just comes out and says, yep, it happened. We're not doing anything in terms of investigating.
Here's how we're going to
play
fix
ball.
It. Here's what we're going to do. And right, and I'd take the slings and arrows for 6 months and it'd be over.
Yeah. Coming up, we get the professor's picks for this weekend's game without Jim trying to talk him into some crazy upset. We don't have that happening today. We got the Groz in. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.